Blog Talk Radio.
When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Now, you must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and it will break the enemy.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space to exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Folks, you're not hallucinating. Yes, it's Saturday. Yes, it's 6 p.m. And yes, this is AfroNerd. However, normally you would be hearing the comic shop intro. And because of popular demand, a.k.a. last Wednesday's midweek review show, the show became so fiery. I turned up the heat. We turned up the heat so easily, unabashedly, we turned on the heat. Folks said, listen, we need more time. We need more time for you guys, with you guys, I should say. So this is going to be called the Grindhouse Pop Culture Remix edition of AfroNerd Radio. This is still the comic shop. We're going to talk about comic book stuff, sci-fi stuff, fantasy stuff. But we're also going to just as easily talk about Batman as we are. We're going to talk about Dr. Michael Eric Dyson. We're going to go back and forth. It's not going to be so much of a demarcation at the 7 o'clock point where we go from the comic shop, we close that door, and then we open the door for AfroNerd Radio. We're going to have a two-hour free-for-all. All are welcome. The water is warm. This is a remix. Everything's going down. We're going to play Urban Alternative. We're going to play Afropunk. We're going to play Nerdcore. We're going to do the damn thing. Without further ado, let's go to a cut from the great Adam Warrock, thanks to the indefatigable Daryl B. He brought this to my attention. True genius, true comedy. You heard of Blurred Lines, Robin Thicke. This is Nerd Lines, the great Adam Warrock. Let's groove. We'll be back with the Grindhouse Pop Culture Remix. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Everybody get up.
I'm buried open in time. Maybe I'm walking past the line.
Wow, talk about the ultimate in parody, folks. Again, that's the great Adam Warrock, Nerd Lines. Without further ado, let's get our own podcast enterprise crew in full effect. First up, the captain. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. This is the remix. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Remix. And of course, we have the invincible Daryl B. Let's just get to it.
Let me put on my remix hat on and say, how do you spell sellout? MTV. How dare you be in Brooklyn and have no rock and roll, no true hip hop? Thank God for Bruno Mars. Thank God for Justin Timberlake, because you guys are posers. Let's get this thing started.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Boy. I see the Bunsen burners up high this evening. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about Miley Cyrus shaking her moneymaker, or attempting to shake her moneymaker. We'll talk about that and really get into it. But first, we've been getting a lot of emails, gentlemen. We didn't talk about it Wednesday, Captain. I don't know how that happened. We didn't get into the real meaty topic. It exploded, you know, once it was disclosed about Ben Affleck donning the cowl for Man of Steel 2, it caused an eruption in the cyberspace. Everyone has gone crazy. I was a bit upset for a few days, to be honest with you. I didn't know how to take it. I'm becoming a bit more comfortable with it, but we have to really unpack this. So I'm going to give this to the master of ceremonies on this one. Daryl, explain to us
why.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Did he overload his own mic again? Okay.
Go ahead. Just take the floor.
All right. Let's just put this straight. I have no problem with getting Ben Affleck in the role. I simply don't, okay? I have friends that waked up. I saw everybody doing the internet breaking down and exploding. I have no problem with it because, to me, the character he played in Argo, that could have been a Bruce Wayne type character, all right? And for me, there's been so much clown stuff that's been done with the man in the costume that they've rarely gotten Bruce Wayne right, all right? And he's one of the actors that possibly can do it. My problem is, what is Warner Brothers' direction? Because remember, we were talking about Affleck being offered this role about 6 months before Argo came out, about him directing Justice League, right? And because of the internet and fan outrage, Warner Brothers got cold feet and backed the hell out. And what happened? Argo's a giant hit, and they have egg on their face. So is this a makeup? Are you backtracking and going, well, we knew all along Ben Affleck was a great actor? No, you didn't. Or if you had never pulled out. You know, this smacks of Whedonitis. In other words, we had Josh Whedon. We let him go. Marvel picked him up. He gives him a blockbuster. We got egg out our face. We denied Ben Affleck. We can't let Marvel pick him up again, so we're going to offer him the role in this film. The other part of this, and Cap, I don't know if you'll see where I'm coming from with this, all right? To me, for their first meeting, you don't start off with Dark Knight Returns. You don't start off with Frank Miller Grimm. You don't start off with a youngish Superman and an old Batman. All right? To me now, you need them comparably the same age for the first meeting, which this will be on film. Because once you do Dark Knight Returns, all right, that sort of thing, once you do that, then how you doing later film? To you, Captain.
Well, now, being that, you know, this is a two-hour show, we could talk a little bit longer today. Now, I'm going to go somewhere with this. Now, follow me, listener. When you're dealing with Batman, you have to understand something here. When you're dealing with human beings are into worship. What do they worship? Now, follow me with this now, before you start saying, where's the captain going? Number one, we worship money. Next thing we worship is sex. How do you mean by sex? You see some women with a slim waist, big booty, she's in somewhere. She's in some place, but she does not belong. She doesn't have the credentials, but everyone gets it, you know. Or it might be some man, if that's what you're into, a female, you're a man. Sex. The next thing we worship are power structures. Invalidation versus validation. If you graduate from Yale versus City College, you get a business degree, but which one is more important? The one coming from Yale. Bigger, stronger power structure. Same degree, but invalidation versus validation. Now, the next thing man gets into where they worship their energy is supernatural spirits. Now, that being said, I don't have to explain that. You have Christianity, Buddhism, Satanism, Allah, any type of thing. Batman has actually become a spirit, to tell you the truth. That's the top dog. We give a lot of energy to the Batman. Now, what do I mean now? It has a power structure behind it. That's DC. It has money, huge amount of money behind it. Huge amount of money. So there's the worship again. I wouldn't say so much sex, but 3 out of 4 is not bad. It has also become a spirit. Now, this being said, you are emotionally attached to this Batman character. Geek, nerd, and even the man walking the street, because you can relate to this Batman character. So you're emotionally attached to it. When we were here on the show, the great Afro Nerd and the great Daryl B, they were debating, and I decided not to get into the debate. I said to myself, take Christian Bale in the back room and offer him $50 million and let's get it going. I'm not going to go back and forth with debating who should play who and who. But we know Christian Bale, Rumorville, hint, hint, does not like Zack Snyder. He doesn't feel Zack Snyder has the acting chops. I mean, not the acting chops, the directing chops. The directing chops. He's not an actor. He doesn't care for him from that perspective. But a broken clock tells the right time twice a day. Zack Snyder got that Watchmen movie correct. Superman was a good job. But the reality of it is that with these superhero movies, all you have to do from a director perspective, most of the time, is just not mess it up because it's built into the newest sphere already. So they pulled this on us. I had said during that time, we don't know which way this is going to go because this is what these suits do, especially over there with DC. They like to just seem like they're just making it up as it goes along. And I didn't want to get emotionally involved with all of that because they rip your heart out of your chest. Now,
No, no problem. I concur with that.
Now, I did not see Ben Affleck coming. Some of you clairvoyants might say, I saw this coming. I didn't see it coming. I didn't expect that. Can Ben Affleck play the character? Yes, he can play the character. Of course he can play the character. But as the great Daryl B says, what direction are you going in this movie, man? Are you penning it day by day and then crumbling the papers and then throwing away and saying that it doesn't work? What are you doing? Because what you have to understand, you have a whole universe of human beings that are emotionally attached to this character, more so than any other character that you put out there. Iron Man's on the come up, but I think it's not so much Iron Man, it's more Robert Downey Jr. following. For those of you that are saying, well, Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man and everything else, does a lot of sales, we know that. But I think it's more of a a Robert Downey Jr. thing more so than just Iron Man. Batman's a whole different situation. What direction are you going in with this? So, again, I think Affleck is a good director. More so, he's a better director than he is an actor. He can play the role, but which way are you going with this? And let me show you how they also dupe us. If the movie is bad, they already have my ticket twice. What does that mean if the movie's bad? It does $700 million if the movie's bad. If the movie's a good movie, it's a billion-dollar franchise. They know that. They're playing with us, man. They're playing with us, man. Don't play with my emotions, man. Play with my emotions, you get hurt. Don't play with my emotions. Batman is my guy, man. That's all I'm saying.
That is a good point. They have our money regardless. Because we're going to have to watch it for the show, and then we're going to have to watch it for pure enjoyment. So they got us, Cap, they got us coming and going. But again, they do so good in planning out their animation joints. DC and Warner Brothers does such a good job playing. How do they consistently look like they're running in a fog when it comes to their live action movies? I said it on the blog a couple of weeks ago that I had to praise Marvel's animation style not because I like them, but because they're taking a page out of DC's book and making one universe and making everything concurrent. My problem is with movies like this, all right, you need to have somebody planning out the bigger picture, all right? Say what you will about Marvel movies. And I've heard a lot of haters come out of the woodwork recently about Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy. Really? Those are what we got coming up. And I'm like, it's all a part of a plan. This is Battlestar Galactica. The front credits, Marvel has many movies, and they have a plan. Where's Warner Brothers' plan? That's all I want to know. I mean, you don't want to copy the Marvel style. We get that, all right? So why didn't you just make this JLA? You know, why didn't you just... See, I think fans would accept Affleck in the role if it was a JLA movie. But since it's Batman versus Superman, since it's co-billed, since it's a big on top of a pedestal thing instead of an ensemble cast, that's where I think the outrage comes. Oh my God, no, he can't carry this. Go ahead, Cap.
Go ahead. So let me tell you what happened. You just touched upon something very important. You know what these DC individuals did? They were trying to give you a JLA. But they realized they cannot just throw it out there like that. They were caught left foot, right foot. They didn't know what they were doing because of how the Avengers was built up via Marvel. They wanted to say, okay, we could just go do a JLA. We're not going to do it the way Avengers did. So, you know, what happened was now you have a Superman versus Batman, which helps build that universe a little bit more. Part of it is fair, too. You know, and also you had the advent of the Superman movie doing so well. They were hoping it didn't happen, like it didn't go down more or less like the Green Lantern situation. They were hoping that didn't happen. Or should I say like the 2006 Superman movie. They were hoping. And once they got back the numbers and everything else, now, you know, people are sitting a bit more comfortable in their chairs. They're like, okay, I know I'm going to be here for another 2 years. I won't be fired. You know, I won't lose my... lose my high-end six-figure job with my seven-figure bonus. I'm here. I don't have anything to worry about. So let's go. Let's figure it out. And as you can see, they're doing it day by day. It's not a plan. It's not a plan. This is suit-driven. Any moron can see that. That's why they're playing with emotions, man. Come on, man.
Hold on. Yeah, I've been here. I've just been listening. All right. Once a game, this is the Grindhouse remix. Your ears are not deceiving you. This is a remix of the Comic Shop as well as Afro Radio. We're just going to do a 2-hour special, folks. because the audience has demanded it. We're going to do it just one time where we have Daryl B. sitting in. We're going to talk about politics, sci-fi, pop culture, all in one sandwich. So it is what it is. Right now we're talking about this highly controversial casting of Ben Affleck, noted filmmaker. I can't say actor, though. I can't say actor, but he is one. Maybe he will prove something different. He has a lot to prove. He has a lot to prove this time coming up. What I want to do, gentlemen, I want to go to a quick musical break, very quick, and then I'll give you – I want to weigh in on this.
Yes.
And then we'll move on. And then we will move on to other castings that I find interesting, not so controversial, though. Just not so controversial. This one, highly controversial.
You're playing with my emotions.
Yeah.
Are we talking about a certain guy with a metal face coming up? Okay, that's cool.
We'll get to that in a moment. I will say one thing before we go to the break, that the great Benjamin Franklin said, and this is something you can never get away from these adages. He says, by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. Shouting out Warner Brothers. By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. I hope I'm wrong. And that was said 300 years ago. And it still stands true, doesn't it? All right. And also, I hope that our Batman doesn't have a Boston accent. Riddler. Hey, Riddler. Hey, Joker. The Bat Car. Come on. All right. This is the tall black guy, James Brown, Big Payback Remix. Hey, Joker. Be right back. Suspect my own mutant ability is to ingest the funk and then to spew forth knowledge and wisdom. I'm just putting it out there, folks. Again, this is the Afro Nerd. Welcome to the Grindhouse Remix Edition, Saturday, talking about Ben Affleck, a Joker, a Riddler. I hope we don't hear that. The jokes are already going out on the Twitterverse about his Boston accent, so he's going to have to do something with that. If you look at the AfroNerdRadio.com montage where we have all these, you know, all the video picture representations of what we're going to talk about, I have a picture of Batman at Ben Affleck, or Ben Affleck as Batman, with the Boston the Boston Red Sox insignia instead of the Bat insignia. So we'll see how that works out. I put it out like this, briefly. I'm kind of riding with Dow on this one. I think that there's a debt owed. This is how these things happen. Ben Affleck is every once in a while, not even every once in a while, pretty routinely in Hollywood, there's always someone that is deemed that guy, or it's his turn. We see this all the time with award shows, where the person that should have won the award doesn't get it, and the person that is owed one, he ends up getting he or she ends up getting that award, and that's what happened here. I think it's a matter of it's his time. He has gravitas. He has cachet. He's a two-time Oscar Award winner. There's some prestige with him now, and they think that some backroom deals say, hey, listen, politically speaking, we're going to have to point in his direction. And I think that's what happened. Now, what makes me uncomfortable about this thing, but I'm growing more comfortable about it, first of all, there's so much outrage towards that play now. They're using that word now. That acronym or Franken word, Batfleck. There's so much outrage that other thespians have come to his assistance saying, hey, give the guy a break. Let's see what he can do. So maybe we'll have to do that. Now, in the case of Heath Ledger, I have to admit, I was nervous about this gentleman too. Because after Jack Nicholson, well, how could, you know, Jack Nicholson he was the Joker. For 20 years, he was the quintessential Joker. This young man comes around, Jack who? That's Nicholson we're talking about. Jack who? This young man blew it out the park. But the difference is that there really was not a body of work with Ledger, not in the same way. He had done some movies, but not to the extent that Affleck has done movies. Affleck has really turned out some stinkers. Stinkers. There's only a couple of films that I actually liked that Ben Affleck was in. So I'm a little nervous about really the roadmap that led him to Batman. Now, as far as his directing ability, I can't hate on that. If he was going to direct any of these films, it's okay. I'm more comfortable with that. But we're talking about the irony, actually, is I suspect there's probably less controversy with someone who says he's going to play Lincoln or some historical figure or Gandhi than it would be for a fictional character. That's how insane the world is. I'll say as much as I love Batman, but in some ways we'll give a pass for someone to play a historical figure and less of a pass for someone to play a fictional hero. Let someone sloppy come in as Sherlock Holmes. Or someone sloppy come in to play any of these fictional characters, all hell breaks loose. I mean, that's just the way we're built. I mean, Batman, the insignia of Batman, has overtaken Superman as really the number one hero. So you have to get him done right. And I know that Kevin Smith and Affleck and all these guys that they are comic book geeks. They know the material, but can they translate the material? That much I don't know. So time will tell with this. The only thing I can say, gentlemen, is there's so much disrespect or shakiness on the part of the public with really the hardcore geeks with Ben Affleck. He's going to have to do something. He cannot just phone this in. I hear that he was already in shape from his previous film. So I know he's going to go. He's going to be able to do the physical. He's going to physically be Batman. But Batman is, you know, it's not a joke. He's got to, you know, he's really got to come in with a real performance. Hey, maybe, because we're led to believe at this point that Christian Bale is the quintessential Batman. You know, they're even asking. I saw TMZ caught Michael, who's the Batman from the 80s, the late 80s?
Michael Keaton.
Yeah. They caught Michael Keaton at some supermarket or something. And, you know, just in his bit, they were asking him, what do you think? And he said, hey, you know, I think he can do it. He's an actor. But it just shows you how deep this is going. They're going to all the matter of fact, I believe William Shatner tweeted Ben Affleck And then he said something sly. He said, well, if you ever need an Alfred. So now the geeks are like, well, maybe Shatner can play. Maybe he can play Alfred. People, I have to admit, I kind of want to see that.
Man, you know? Keep your eyes out, or it's floating around the net. But if you, I don't, the Patton Oswalt answer, and nerds turned on Patton Oswalt, and I was just like, excuse me, Patton Oswalt makes sense. You're telling him like he's gonna kill the world of Batman. Listen, if Batman and Robin did not kill the Batman franchise, I doubt Ben Affleck will. You know, simple as that.
Let's go to the chat room. Let's go to the chat room for a moment. It's all hell's breaking loose. I see someone. What would Jet Porkins do? That's his nom de plume. He says, "What does he say here? Heath Ledger has ruined any future Jokers. Might be onto something there."
No,
but he did it.
I disagree.
No, let's see. Let's go into what I think he's saying. He says, but he did it well enough that they could replace him with an actor who could do it the same way. I didn't care for Heath Ledger or even that he died, but loved his Joker. You know, I don't know, man. Heath Ledger really did. He did such a good job on that. You know, what do you pull it back? Do you go worse? I mean, where do you go with that act, with that performance? He's on to something.
No, I
mean, do you want to see a campy? I mean, do you really want to see a campy Joker at this point, or do you want to see someone kind of sort of?
Well, you guys know my feelings about it. He was a great Anarchy. He was a great Rafe. He was not Joker to me. He did not kill Joker in my eyes. The reason why is you put Joker on the shelf for about 10 years.
That's true.
And then you bring him back. All right, Barry, just like I said, Batman and Robin didn't kill the franchise. Heath Ledger didn't kill the Joker. He was great in the role of a villain. But to me, again, opinions vary. You love him as Joker. Me, the dude was not funny. He was terrifying. He was not funny. I need my Joker to be funny and terrifying at the same time. He had one joke, the magic trick. That was it. That was not the Joker. That was Anarchy. Thank you. Although I respect your opinion, I respectfully disagree. Back to you, boss.
I see Q-Storm is already, he's weighing in. He's saying, thank you, Daryl. So I guess he agrees with you on this one. I believe that he was definitely a Joker. I think there's been different iterations of Joker dating back for 70-plus years. Pick one. You know, do you want Cesar Romero Joker up there? I mean, what do you want? I mean, Jack Nicholson played a form of the. You know, Jack Nicholson's Joker was pretty horrific as well. I mean, you know, different acting styles, different interpretations. I thought that this interpretation of the Joker netted him. Listen, you have to give him props because his single performance uplifted the. One could make the argument that his performance uplifted the comic book. To movie medium. It uplifted it to where everyone has to take it seriously now. That's why, actually, you have to thank the Joker for why people are angry with Ben Affleck with being Batman. They don't want to hear a Joker, a Riddler.
All right. We got to go to the next topic. We got to go to the next topic, man.
They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that, Daryl.
Thank you, Mr. Ledger. All right, I'll just say this, though. The way we just did it here, if more fans explain their points just like this and to our commenter, explain their points out like that, all right, I wouldn't be as angry as I am right now with the Internet fan base again. Because you're the reason why I have a stigma attached to me, why Afternoon has a stigma attached to him. Why the captain has a stigma attached to him. Anytime we say, oh, we like comic books, we like fantasy movies, oh, the one of those. Because people outside saw how we reacted to this news universally. Hey, you're going to go, oh, that bleep and bleep and bleep. No, you are intelligent.
influencing your opinions in an intelligent manner. All right? I am sick and tired of you guys acting like it's junior high school.
And I thought my jokes were bad.
Give me one reason why I shouldn't have my boy here pull your head off.
How about a magic trick? I'm going to make this pencil disappear. Ta-da! It's gone.
Come on, man.
All right. Let's move along, man. Let's move along.
That guy was terrifying. Heath Ledger was a shiznit. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, he was playing as anarchy. Next point.
No, listen. We go to the phones, gentlemen. But you have to admit, he changed the game because the Academy had to acknowledge a comic book movie. Once that happened, this is the reason why we really have a show as popular as we do, and we're talking about this stuff with severity. And the way we're talking about this in a severe mode is because of Heath Ledger in some respects. He changed the game. He raised the bar. He has to be respected for that. That performance. He didn't come in with Cesar Romero with a white makeup over a mustache. Let's go to the phones. Again, folks, this is the Grindhouse Remix. 484, tell us who you are, where you're calling from. The Grindhouse, what's up?
Hey, fellas, this is Q Storm calling from Philly.
Go ahead.
Just trying to get my thoughts together and compose myself. I know you guys are moving on to another topic, so I'll be very quick. Ben Affleck is Batman. To me, it's stunt casting. That's all it is. Ben Affleck is a good actor, but I'm sick of people saying, oh, well, he's an actor. He can do it. Give him a chance. He's an actor. Robert De Niro's an actor. Denzel Washington's an actor. I don't want to see them wear the Batman costume, so that's a ridiculous argument to make. Does he fit the role? I say no. Is he a fantastic? I'd rather see him direct this film than star as Batman in it, to be honest. So that's what I have to say about that. In regards to the Joker and Heath Ledger, I will say this on air. Anybody who wants to get at me can get at me. So Heath Ledger, he provided a great performance as a serial killer. As the Joker, not so much. Exactly for the reasons Daryl said. One, he wasn't funny enough. The Joker has this maniacal laughter. He has this sense of psychotic comedy about him, which I did not get out of Ledger. Two, the Joker is more than just a man who paints his face white. Part of his makeup is because, just like in the new Spider-Man, what they did, they took away basic foundation aspects of Spider-Man that made the character who he is. They took that away from the Joker, as far as I'm concerned. Part of what he is because he was disfigured in a preternatural accident, and it really changed his psyche completely. I did not get that. And three, I'll say it. I'm saying this. Q Storm. The only reason Ledger got so much shine as the Joker is because he died. That's it.
And the other reason I hate the Ledger or all this love for Ledger is, to me, the guy who played Harvey Dent, whose name escapes me right now, he did a great job in the role. And I wanted to see a Two-Face movie. But because Ledger was the Joker, you had to kill off Two-Face quickly. What the DC?
Here's a question. Were the Jokers from the TV screen and theatrical, were the Jokers from the TV screen and also the theatrical actually better at playing their role than Batman playing his role?
Yes. Unequivocally, yes.
Amazing,
the guys that played Joker have done a better job than the guys that have played Batman, mainly because most of the Batman haven't gotten Bruce Wayne right.
All right.
Hold on. Just for edification, one of our folks in the chat room, what would Jack Porkins do? Excuse me.
Aaron Eckhart. Aaron Eckhart was the actor. And actually,
okay.
he's an actor of note. You know, he's a very good actor. I thought that his Two-Face, his Harvey Dent, was on point. As far as, I mean, we're going to go to the next casting thing. The other casting choices appear to be less controversial, somewhat. But as far as Joker being a serial killer, if you've been reading the DC 52, he killed like an entire police station. He is a serial killer now. He's a nut. He's a maniacal, nutty clown. There's been different interpretations of that character. You know, he's been in the 50s, he was far more campy with goofy devices, you know, and holding the dynamic duo like we saw in the 60s, holding them with these weird devices, these Rube Goldberg-like machines, death machines. You know, now, you know, people wanted a darker Joker, and in recent years, he's been pretty much that guy.
D-Bert, you just said it. The Joker is a maniacal clown. From Ledger, I got maniac. Great. I did not get clown at all.
Well, you had clown makeup on. I mean, it was sadistic clown.
Yeah. Okay. There's more to it than that, my friend. There's more to joking than clown makeup. That's what I'm saying.
But listen,
clown in It was closer to being the Joker than Heath Ledger was.
This interpretation that we're now in the D52 doesn't even have a face. He ripped his own face off. I mean, you know, what is that? He's crazy.
And
I mean,
hence why.
Over the years, the Joker has become more and more, less and less a clown and more just a freak show. So that's essentially what Heath Ledger was. I mean, the new Joker doesn't even have a face. It's been ripped off. He did it himself. What's that?
And hence why Nightwing is always my boy for the end of the comic storyline, The Last Laugh. He went, you know what? Every time we put you in, you get out and you kill more people close to us. I'm ending this now. And he straight up killed the Joker and Batman saved him. And the Nightwing just goes, what are you doing? What are you doing? We played this dance too many times. And that's why, you know what, I can't be a Batman fan. Sorry.
All right. Can we proceed, D-Bert?
Yeah, let's go to the next casting choice. Now we're hearing that James Spader, who's a phenomenal. Some people are just actors. We don't have to question their abilities. James Spader, excellent actor. Some folks, to my chagrin, said James who? All these Stargate fans don't realize that it started with him, the movie, 20-some-odd years ago, but they forgot him already, and they forgot about Boston Legal. Anyway, and his 80s, he was an 80s star. Anyway, James Spader returns, and actually I believe he has a new series now on television, or I think streaming. But he's been chosen officially for Marvel.com. So Marvel themselves have officially stated that he is or has been cast as Ultron in the Age of Ultron Avengers 2. What are your thoughts about that? Let's go to the captain first.
Yeah, well, he could definitely play the role. I have no problem with that. He definitely has the chops. He can be versatile at times. You know, that's it. I really don't have anything negative to say as far as that's concerned.
And menacing. He always played the official a-hole in the 80s.
Yes.
He always played that rich, pompous
a-hole lawyer. A-hole lawyer type.
Well, I'm sorry, in the 80s when he was younger. He always played like that a-hole preppy kid. That was his thing. So he can play a villain. And actually, he's always been a great actor. Always been out there. He's in a film called Crash, I believe. He's always done these kind of edgy roles. So he can definitely play a villain. And he will bring something to this Ultron role because they're saying they want to try to humanize him. So we're not going to have some kind of complete robotic thing. He's going to be half robotic, but he's going to be AI. He's going to be maniacal. He's going to be villainous. And Spader, the thing that's real cool about these movies, going back to Ledger, you got to have a real guy in there. That's the whole thing. This guy, even with Downey, everyone has had reservations about people until we actually see the product. I had a quick reservation about Robert Downey Jr. But I had to say, right after I said, well, I'm not sure, but he's a real actor. I had to say that. The man played Chaplin. So I couldn't sit there and say, well, see, when you have a real actor, not that much he can't do. I'm not convinced that Affleck is a real actor. James Spader is a real actor.
Oh. All right,
I'll just say it like that.
He's a real director, though.
We're not talking about directing ability. We're talking about his acting abilities now.
Yeah.
All right, but his acting ability. You can't tell me in one vein how much you love the Terminator movies with Schwarzenegger and then turn around and tell me Affleck is not a real actor. All right, you can't do that. You can't device it like that, all right? If you've seen The Town, all right, if you've seen Argo, he can act, all right? I will just say that. Is he the greatest actor in the world? No, I grant that to you. But don't diss the man's style. You know, he's got his fan base for a reason. All right? He is more than just the Kevin Smith movies. As far as James Spader as Ultron, I like him voicing Ultron. I just don't like all the changes they're making to Ultron. I'm going to need a cyborg. What? A cyborg? Ultron? Oh, him didn't create him. Okay, it's going to be Tony Stark? Okay. All right. I was aware with that. Hearing a cyborg type thing? No. Do the voice or whatever, and then have the switch be made in the middle. You know, this is tampering too much with it. All right, I'll say that right up front. This is tampering too much with the character because you're going to have longtime Avengers fans go to see this movie and come out and act just as dumb as the Ben Affleck haters. I will say that if you make him into a cyborg, yeah. Just see what happens, Marvel. Good luck with this.
Well, here's can I weigh in real quick?
They'll say, maybe this is their logic. I don't actually know. They'll say, well, you know, he goes through transitions and eventually we get the full, you know, robot situation later into the movie or into the next transition. That's what they may turn around and say, Darryl. That's all.
That's a good cutout. Yeah. All
right,
go Q.
So, I'm getting conflicting information. I've heard other information from another website, that another podcast, that the AI Jarvis that was created by Tony Stark is going to become corrupted, and that somehow that's going to become Ultron, and that the Ultron character is going to be motion capture, and that the voice was going to be provided by Paul Bettany, which would make sense because Paul Bettany has voiced Jarvis in all of the iterations of the movie. So can you guys shed some light on that? That's what I've heard.
Well, now you're really changing the story.
You know what? That kind of would make sense.
I like that idea. I like that concept, by the way.
That would kind of make sense. Say Tony Stark, when he got rid of the giant nuke through the vortex, right? He has to go through a bunch of cosmic radiation and whatever, all right, before he fell back down to Earth and released the rocket. The cosmic radiation affected the program. Something sentient got in there. You don't know. As I've stated on prior shows, just check out the living Iron Man suit storyline. It can be done. It would make sense. All right, in our world, it would make sense. But have Paul Bettany start out nice, and then transform sinister, and that's when you cue the Spader voice in, like, hello, Anthony. You know, something like that. That would make sense. Cyborg? No. Go ahead, Apple Nerd.
Well, listen, I heard what Q heard, but we checked this out. From the Marvel website, James Spader is officially Ultron as the voice. That much we know officially. The other part of it, as far as the storyline, that's still floating out there in Cyberverse. I don't know how accurate that is. I know that James Spader is the guy. I'm led to believe that Ultron is going to be probably some kind of CGI creation, and that he will be the voice of it. Now, how he arrives, how he becomes Ultron, how he's created, unfortunately, we're not going to see a Hank Pym. That doesn't make any sense because we're going to have an Ant-Man movie. And it's going to be, matter of fact, he's going to be part of the phase, what, phase three, I think? Phase two or phase three? So why are you having all these phases? The phases are meant to be a connectedness or interconnectedness between each movie. So why are you going to have, this is where, this is like Marvel channeling Warner Brothers. Why are you going to have, you know, this connective tissue and not have some glimmer of this original storyline with a troubled Hank Pym creating this AI? But, you know, listen.
Unless Hank Pym isn't in the suit.
Well, but the thing is, then you got to go through the whole thing of creating an Ant-Man movie and all that before we get a chance to see Ultron on screen. This is a change I have no problem with because I don't want to go through all that backstory before I see Ultron.
Well, there's going to be a Ant-Man movie. They're filming it now.
All right, but they're not. It's not going to come before the next Avengers, is it?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
I believe so. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not coming before Avengers 2, is it?
The Ant-Man's movie is slated for February 2015. The Avengers movie is slated for May, June of that time. So it will be out before the Ant-Man movie will be in the Ghost Rider / Blade spot in February.
Well,
that
is strange.
Well, if that's the case, then why the hell wouldn't they have it connected to the Avengers movie? Unless maybe it is. It makes no sense.
But like I said, there it is again. The way with Marvel's success rate with these movies and how it is, they've opened up an infinite amount of directions you can go. And we could buy the directions because they've had success with doing this. You know, that's what that brings me back to Warner Brothers again. You see what Marvel's doing and their plans there, all right? Why don't you get your top creators from Legendary? Well, Legendary's back in the fold again. Legendary, Warner Brothers, DC, sit them in a room and plan out 3-4 movies. I'm not saying create the scripts and stuff right there on the spot, but at least get synopsis all ready to go. So you could have a plan. Have a plan. All right? Marvel has a plan here. All right? I still don't like Ultron over Thanos because we've been set up for Thanos, but I'm going to see how it does. But at least they have a plan. Everything is flowing. You know, that... Yo, Alpha Nerd, take over Warner Brothers for a couple of years. Let's correct all of this.
Listen, but I'm looking at Ant-Man. The release date says November 6, 2015. So, November 6. So,
okay.
You know, I think some of this stuff is being done willy-nilly. Because, like you said, at the end of Avengers, we saw Thanos as the villain, and then all of a sudden we went into an Age of Ultron. Even the Age of Ultron title is from the crossover event from a few months ago. I mean, this is coming off like it's being done. This is being done kind of willy nilly,
The other thing is, they have to explain. They got to spend some time explaining how Tony Stark gets his suits. Gets back into the thing of making the suits, because it was very clear at the end of Iron Man 3. I guess when they thought Downey was done playing the role, that they pretty much obliterated most of that whole, you know, all of his tech. And implied that he was done, you know. So we're going to have to spend time in Avengers dealing with that as well, aren't we?
Listen, once the money's made, you know these characters are never truly done. he could throw away his chess piece all he wants. We know that someone shoved $50 million in his face. Oh, well, I guess I can put on a suit again. I mean, it is what it is. I see that.
No, of course they can get Robert Downey back, but I'm just saying story in terms of story. Because I remember there was a quote that I forget who directed Iron Man 3, but he was asked, you know, aren't you leaving Joss Whedon in a bind with the way you've ended your story? And he says, it's not my problem. That was his quote.
But he signed on. I think it's on record that he signed on for at least 2 Avengers films. So we don't know about Iron Man, but he signed on for Avengers. So he's still around.
No Iron Man. Tony Stark is the tech advisor, and it'll be Don Cheadle in the role of the Avengers.
I like
Don Cheadle up the Hulk.
I like that. That's
right
a good idea.
Now, let's sign up. Cheadle said he wanted a bigger role, baby. Avengers 2. I can wish, can't I? Yeah. All right, next topic.
All right, we're gonna.
That's why you guys should be running the film division.
Oh, please. It'll be a different scene.
I mean, I'm still tripping off the Fassbender as Batman suggestion from a couple weeks ago. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Truck of money. Truck of money.
Yeah, well, he would be the guy. You know what? We are still on Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck isn't really – he looks like a Batman that didn't lose his parents. that's the deal. I mean, these other guys have more of a dark, brooding look. Ben Affleck is dark, at least by white male standards. He's dark. But he's not – he doesn't have that brooding, I lost my parents vibe. He's too happy.
The only
in the world – go ahead, Daryl.
I was just going to say real quick, the only on-screen presence that Affleck has had that makes me think he could do Bruce Wayne is the 10 or so minutes of his performance in Boiler Room, if you guys saw that. Other than that,
I was about to say that.
People forget he was in there.
Well, I worked in the Boiler Room at around the time that was out, actually. And that was very accurate. Very, that arrogant, corporate or wannabe corporate attitude. That was pretty much what it was like. And I thought that he was good in that. There's one or two roles here and there, but you go back to Geely, not a good look. I mean, the number of films that scare me. You know, but that was, hey, to be all fair, Boiler Room was 13 years ago. So let's hope that, you know, he went from that to getting it to an Oscar. He had an Oscar before that, you know, as a writer. But, you know, listen, I'm led to believe that he's going to put his hands in the dirt and do this character right, because there's just too much vitriol going towards his way if he screws this up. Literally. He's got to come up with something.
What other guy can you say killed two heroes? that would be the stain on him in the Comic-Con community right there. And for people in the black community, I'll just say it like this. You brought up a week ago how we should be supporting our own heroes and stuff, and we have a segment coming up to that fact, all right? You see the passion we show here for heroes? Try showing that sort of passion in characters that are black made. That's what we need to do. That's what I'm trying to get across to you.
That's true, too. Listen, let's go to a quick groove. I want to talk about one more comic book related thing, but I want to switch it to Miley Cyrus, believe it or not. we got to get into that. Miley Cyrus / Afropunk. We'll talk about that after we talk about Bradley Cooper briefly as Rocky Raccoon. So, a Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, don't call him Rocky.
Let's go to in channeling Afropunk, London Soul, Someday. This is in honor of Afropunk. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Come on back. You're gonna drown out there in the sea. It's gonna get much better. That much you can take. Much fun, much cooler than a tropical breeze. And then the fuss coming, hop up on their own decree. Come on back, put yourself together, before you see the light of day without no window weapons to bear. Come on back, you're gonna have a lot of good time. It's gonna get much better, the nose will start to feel fine. So much fun, it's cooler than a tropical breeze. And then the fuss coming, hop up on that old decree. Come on back.
Back, folks, once again, that was London Soul's Someday, recently featured Afropunk, ironically, that's why we played it. Before we get into the Afropunk / Miley Cyrus conversation, just as a reminder, folks, this is the Grindhouse Remix Edition of Afro Radio / The Comic Shop. Normally, for those who have been sticking with us for these many months and years, The Comic Shop airs normally at 6 p.m., and then we close that door, open up a new door, at 7 p.m. for Afro Radio. This time, we're just going to do a free-for-all remix show where everything's just kind of gobbled up and mixed up, and we're talking about everything under the sun, basically because the audience demanded it. Last Wednesday, we got into a really festive, vibrant, fiery discussion, and because of my gym schedule, actually, we had to cut it short. So we're making this an extended conversation. Gentlemen, last time we left before the break, we were talking about these casting choices, some controversial, some not so much. We know of the Guardians of the Galaxy. For those who are unfamiliar with that property, dates back to, I believe, the late 60s, and it's essentially a Star Wars-esque space opera, Marvel's version. They're trying to say that it's not like Star Wars, but it's very much in the Star Wars vein. Very much intergalactic, interstellar, and you have an anthropomorphic rodent being played by Bradley Cooper. Darryl, what are your thoughts on this? Is this a good choice? Well, I thought he was supposed to be Australian or have an Australian accent.
Well, hey, listen, when I hear Australian accent, I think of Wolverine in Pride of the X-Men or the Wolverine and the Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends thing. All right. Bradley Cooper can play a badass. Bradley Cooper can play an evil dude. Bradley Cooper can play an action-adventure hero. All of it fit Rocket Raccoon really well. Because most of the people here have only been exposed to him from the Avengers show, if you caught that. His appearance in Avengers. Even his appearance in Ultimate Spider-Man wasn't bad, all right? This is a rodent alien that you don't want to mess with, okay? I think Bradley Cooper can convey that because he's hardcore, he's got the guns, and at the same time, he will quip you to death at the same time. Just imagine Spider-Man that's furry, that carries, like, giant guns from Lord knows where he pulls it out from, and at the same time, dissing you as he kills you. Bradley Cooper could do that. You know,
I hate to say this, because Ryan Reynolds' track record isn't that great, but maybe he might have had a better deal where we don't have to see him and just hear him.
because he's very quick quipped as well.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
So, most likely, but you know what? We're talking about people that got tainted. You know, that whole X-Men Origins Wolverine, not because of anything Ryan Reynolds did, but because of what they transformed Deadpool into, that tainted Ryan Reynolds by association. And then you get Green Lantern, and let's just say that wasn't him being Hal Jordan, that was Hal Jordan being Ryan Reynolds, because we are all like, yeah, this isn't how we all know, you know? If they named that character Kyle Rayner, I think it would be better. Because it was like, okay, the character's named Hal Jordan is actually going to be played by Ryan Reynolds playing himself. You know, Ryan Reynolds could do Rocket Raccoon, you know, with his quips and all of that. But at the same time, Rocket goes to places that I'm not sure Ryan Reynolds will go to. And just think about this. The buddy part of this film is going to be Bradley Cooper with Vin Diesel. If you told me when they proposed this that I will get Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel interacting as the buddy tandem in this, I would have said, yeah, Josh, but that's the Marvel machine. Half a nerd.
Well, you know what? I said this before on the show. I always thought that David Boreanaz from Angel and somebody has their radio on, I think. Who's ever listening to us, you have to cut your radio down. So I'm getting some feedback. Okay. What I'm saying that David Boreanaz, I thought that he was going to get through. I thought he would have made it better. I mean, from TV. But I thought he would have done a better Hal Jordan. He played Hal Jordan in an animated effort and did a very good job. And I think he looks like Hal Jordan. But they went with the guy that, you know, all the girls dig, although I think Boreanaz has his female fandom also. But you know, it was the suits that made it. It's the suits. I found this out recently, but the difference between DC and Marvel, that Marvel has an in-house creative arm. DC really does not have that, and DC needs to get one fast because they're literally letting the suits make these decisions and they're lousy at it. I mean, even as much as I like Man of Steel to a certain degree, I'm half with Man of Steel. It really wasn't what it could have been. And that's because the suits were involved in that also. So it is what it is. Any thoughts, Daryl, Captain?
Hey, D-Bert?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Q.
This is Q Storm. I did have you brought up Man of Steel, and I don't want to change topics if you want to move on to something else, but I wanted to throw out another casting choice to you, talk to you guys about this. Bryan Cranston as Lex Luthor.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be very brief. Bryan
okay.
Cranston, a brilliant actor, brilliant, from Seinfeld to Malcolm in the Middle, brilliant actor. But here's the problem. I do not want to see Walter White on screen in the next Superman movie. To me, Lex Luthor should have been Dean Norris, the actor who now has two, not one, but two hit shows on TV, Under the Dome and Breaking Bad. I'm watching Breaking Bad on Netflix. That guy is Lex Luthor through and through.
Okay. All right, I'll take the opposite. I like him in the role. His Walter White, you know, what you have to have is that charm to sucker everybody in and the ruthlessness to carry out your plan. And Bryan Cranston, with his Walter White, Heisenberg, can carry that out. You know, so we differ here, but at least that's one casting role that's closer to the mark in terms of planning by Warner Brothers. Afternoon.
Yeah, you know, I'm not against Cranston doing this thing. I think Cranston, he's, you know, listen, we wouldn't have thought that he could pull off a Breaking Bad type of role based on Malcolm in the Middle. So this guy seems to have the acting chops to do whatever's required. So I think he's going to be in a suit. He's going to be this badass corporate raider. He's going to talk down Superman, he's going to do what he needs to do. I think he's going to do what he needs to do. And I'm less concerned about him. I have less reservations about him than going to Ben Affleck. That's for sure.
My thing is going to be with this is there's going to be a scene where he, as Lex Luthor, is going to confront Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne in a corporate setting, all right? And both of them are going to try to intimidate the one another. We can see Bryan Cranston intimidate Ben Affleck. Can we really see Ben Affleck intimidating Bryan Cranston?
Well, we'll have to see. We got to wait until 2015. All right, let's go to we got a call, Ash. Let's go to a call. Now they're snapping off. Folks, the lines are open. We did see someone, and then he left. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. This is the Grindhouse Remix. Let's just turn things topsy-turvy. Let's talk about Miley Cyrus at the MTV Music Awards. I actually have a clip from the Young Turks. Let's listen to the Young Turks for a few moments, and then we're going to unpack on this thing. And we have to talk about Afropunk as well. I know Daryl was there. I was there. So I'm somewhat – I don't get depressed. I don't believe in depression. But I'm surely disappointed that – I wish we couldn't have Afropunk every weekend. I just love Afropunk. So let's go to this clip first, and we'll talk about Miley Cyrus. Hold on.
I didn't think that it was racial at all. Okay, so let's discuss whether Miley Cyrus' performance was racial. Okay, I'm with JR that I thought it was like I thought maybe she was on drugs at the moment, like she had taken like a decent amount of Molly, like with like no.
I like how all the kids, no matter what drug they're on, it's Molly. It's always Molly.
Well, she didn't bite anybody's face off, so I eliminated bath salts.
There are many other drugs out there, but okay. It doesn't matter. Our generation, Molly.
I mean, Molly's in her song. Anyway. Like, she was acting so weird, and I'm with Jared, the performance sucked so much, et cetera, that I was like, I don't know, is she high right now? Yeah, but I don't know, I feel like maybe it's because I'm old. But in terms of racial, she had black people on stage. How are you going to do a music performance at the VMAs without black people?
So the argument is that she used the black dancers as props.
But wait a minute, it was like one big thing, right? And at the end, and I'm so uncool, I don't even know who the two guys were at the end. They were the performers, but they were black. They also had black performers on the stage. It was like one big 6.5-minute performance. First it was Cyrus, then it was Thick, and then it was the two guys at the end. So, I mean, and then if they had white people on stage with dancers, which Thick did, would that have been using white people as props?
Look, I don't know if it's about race. I think that it's more about her trying to shake her past image more than anything else. She wants... I agree with JR in the sense that she wants to take on a completely different identity. In the process of doing so, she's making a fool out of herself, and she's making a fool or a mockery out of a very popular culture that people do enjoy.
But, I mean, is, like, twerking something that's, like, respected in the African-American community and she's making light of it? It's twerking.
Yeah, but
it's... Am I missing something?
It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like a... strip move, right? Like a stripper's nasty ass strip move. You're shaking your ass, right?
Okay.
You're bending over and looking like just a piece of ass, basically.
Yeah, but anybody can show ass.
So
right,
I
but
have
it's one thing
that. I have a quick question about this, and I excuse me if I'm being ignorant because I really don't understand this. So, a lot of people had a problem with her twerking, but I mean, if you have all these music videos where they glorify that and they celebrate that. Why is it wrong for her to do it? I think she looks.
I don't understand that.
I think she looks ridiculous doing it. I'm not in favor of it or against it. I just don't understand it. But why is it offensive to some people that she does that?
And by the way, I mean, as dorky as I am, I mean, I get it. Twerking's hot. She's twerking.
Uh oh. Guy?
I'm here. You here?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, okay.
Oh,
sorry about that.
That was an abrupt ending.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. I stopped it, folks. Sorry about that. I was on mute.
She had a great point there at the end, by the way. And we'll get into that. But she has a great point.
Well, this is the deal. This is why all the folks that are on this panel right now should have a gig like they have a gig. Because from what I'm hearing as like the pundits that are out there, they're never able to deconstruct anything. the art of critical thinking has been lost. There's some things that are just not being said from these talking heads about what we're really seeing. I'm hearing that this was a racist performance, that Miley Cyrus was racist, and how dare she do this. I said, no. And the Catherine and I, we spoke about this. That's not the part that's racist. The part that's racist is how it is being perceived by folks. The fact that someone like Nicki Minaj can grind on Lil Wayne at the Billboard Awards, and that being the predominantly the only black act of note, that's basically the only black act that I remember seeing on the Billboard Awards. There's no balance. So for black representation, you have two no talents grinding on each other. Okay, that was put out there. And no one said anything. No one went in. No one weighed in on that as being controversial, because the subtext is, well, black folks are about that. That's a black thing. There's no outrage about that. If Rihanna or anybody else were to do something crazy, it really wouldn't resonate as much as when Miley Cyrus does it. But it's all minstrelsy. If Miley Cyrus is being a minstrel, she's being a minstrel, just like anybody else, irrespective of her hue. Al Jolson was as much of a minstrel as Burt Williams was a minstrel. It doesn't matter. My problem is, why do people seem to care about what Miley does, but they do not care if a black performer does the same thing? That is the question. We have some calls. Before we get to the calls, Daryl, I want you to weigh in on that.
It's all about balance. And to help my guys at Young Turks out, it was Kendrick Lamar and 2 Chainz back there. One has talent, one doesn't. All right? I'll just say it like that. Yeah, I'll leave it to you to decide which is which there.
Right? Kendrick has talent.
that's the answer right there. Anyway, simply put, for me, it's balance, okay? The Grammys a couple of years ago had a brilliant segment, Black and White, where they had B.O.B., Bruno Mars, and Janelle Monáe perform, all right? And what made the segment work was each of them performed their hits, and as each of them were performing their hits, they switched instruments. While Janelle Monáe was up, Bruno Mars was on the drums, B.O.B. was on the drums, and Bruno Mars was on the keyboard. When Bruno Mars performed, Janelle Monáe picked up the guitar, and B.O.B. went to the drums. You know, when B.O.B. performed, there was Bruno Mars picking up the guitar, and Janelle Monáe picked up a part of the drums and started working on that. They switched off, all in black and white, giving it a classic look. Everything was cool. And right there, I'm like, there it goes. Get more minority acts to follow this. Not only are they performing, but they're performing. They're showing their talent. Okay?
Well, you know, I remember that also. I remember the Grammys, and the Grammys also was cross-generational. You had the police. You had Bruno Mars. Everyone, it was everyone together. You saw multiracially and multi-generationally. You saw
Now,
so you're making valid point.
Okay. Now MTV, we got a great performance by Macklemore and Lewis. People will hate on it, but yo, they brought out Jennifer Hudson. Powerful performance. If you ever heard the song "Same Love," powerful performance. Okay. We get a great 15-minute nonstop performance by Justin Timberlake. Great. Absolutely great. Okay? But we're in Brooklyn. Brooklyn has a great cradle of indie rock and roll. Brooklyn has a great cradle of R&B, jazz, hip-hop. Great. What do we get as far as that? We get a good Bruno Mars performance. All right? Gorilla stole the show for me. All right? What else do we get? We get Kanye performing in the dark instead of a picture of like an African forest. That's what we get. And we can't even see his face. He performed in the dark in Brooklyn. That's beautiful. And then all the other good performances get obscured by Miley Cyrus. All Miley Cyrus is doing is what Britney Spears did. All Miley Cyrus is doing is what Christina Aguilera did. All Miley Cyrus is doing is what Madonna did. That is, here's my nice bubblegum persona, and now I'm going to strip down and grind on a dude. Folks, before you criticize, know your history. Know the history of the VMAs for MTV, which shouldn't even have a musical awards show since they show no music. But I digress. You rip Miley Cyrus, you say it's racist, I'm laughing at you as much as I'm laughing at her. You're doing your own sort of twerking here, okay? You're twerking, you're shaking your ass at, oh, this is racist, oh. You're shaking your ass at your intelligence. Come on, people. Do a little research before you rip. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, before we bring in the calls, I know people are really itching to get in on this. Something else also. I believe Miley Cyrus's mother actually said she was proud of her. And I know why. And this is something that the captain and I talked about before we went on air. I don't think we are contributing to this. I don't think we are, because we are actually deconstructing what happened. Where you see CNN and Fox and MSNBC with their feigned indignation. It's feigned indignation, but you're showing the actual footage in the background while you point a finger. Over and over again. You're showing the grinding. So just how disgusted are you? The big winner here is Miley Cyrus, because no one else has talked about any other performance but Miley Cyrus's one. Miley Cyrus did her job. If you really want to get into the brass tacks and into the business aspect of it, as far as a business move, this is what she did. She stuck her tongue out, stuck what little ass she had, she sucked that out, and she caused an uproar. And the reality is, it would be refreshing if we stopped going for it. If the next strumpet decides to do something like this, to call attention to herself, and the media just ignore and just shrug their shoulders and whatever, nothing over here, next. If it did that, that would be interesting. But we played into her hands, and now everyone's talking about her. The feigned indignation. And the only thing that's racial to me, we could talk about her cultural appropriation. That's what it is. Because now twerking's been around since the Baby Got Back video 20 years ago. I've never known there not to be twerking. They just decided to give it a word. But booty shake, what is twerking? Twerking is booty shaking. Booty shaking's been around for 30 years.
Even booty shaking's been around. Booty shaking's been around, hey. If you're an adult female with an adult male, there's been booty shaking. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, people were grinding in the 20s. Let's go to the phones.
Can I weigh in on this before we go to the phones?
Yeah, sure.
Oh. All right. See, when you're dealing with Miss Cyrus, coming from the lineage of Billy Ray Cyrus, nepotism extraordinaire writ large.
Icky,
so
Ricky
now.
Mark.
Yep, writ large. So now, you have these Disney kids, they leave Disney at a certain point, and then they have a tendency, not all of them, but a lot of them, go crazy, go opposite from what they were doing at Disney. So now, she goes on stage, and she knows who the other performers are going to be. We have the biggest artist in the business at this given time also getting ready to go on that stage, Lady Gaga. The next day, is anybody talking about Lady Gaga?
Nope.
No, you're talking about the 20-year-old little young Cyrus female. That's what you're talking about. You're going to her YouTube, you're downloading her single and checking her out and getting into her. And I'm going to tell you the truth. If I had a choice, I wouldn't pay a lot of money. I wouldn't go see Lady Gaga. But just for feces and giggles, I would pay $50 if I happened to be in the area, probably maybe as much as maybe 70. I wouldn't go higher than that if the ticket was. Just to see the wigger behavior that she's carrying on, the Uyghur behavior. Now, the reason why everyone is so caught up into this and being duped is because what do we do here in the world? The worship of the white woman. You see, when you're black, you're not expected really to do much. Expectation is low. Afro-Nerd talks about this all the time. All the time. All the time. All right? When he was on NPR, they used to get at him for it. But the truth is the truth. The expectation of you black people is actually a statement with all of that. So now, even like when we looked at the Zimmerman trial, you know what the big thing was? You felt another race murdered a black person. You know when black people care about black people? Is when they feel either another race, a police officer, or better yet, a white person does something to you, then you care. But when it's regular black with black, whether it's a foolish performance, terrible talent, or anything like that, whatever it could be, long as it's black on black, you don't care about it. You have to start caring about what you're doing for other people to start caring about you. It's real simple. So now, was this racist? No, I think it was absolutely smart because we have to talk about it now. And everybody was talking about her and not talking about the biggest artist in the game. Lady Gaga went under the table. You forgot about her, right? She was out there too. Remember, she broke her hip. She's back now. How come you weren't talking about her? So there we go. That's all I wanted to say. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I see that our newfound friend, what would Jack Porkins do? He says, I think we used the term Uyghur. He said, come on, that's like saying blacks own trashy behavior. That's not what he's saying. What we're saying, if you're listening closely, listen, you're in for a treat by coming to this program because we do break this stuff down. What we're saying is, I said it before, I said it is all minstrelsy, if you heard what I said. I said what Miley Cyrus did, it really wasn't about race as far as her performance. It was a racial subtext there, but as far as what you saw, it was more about it being a minstrel act, and you can see an identical black act, and no one says anything. The core component is, why is it that when Nicki Minaj does her thing, there's no real outrage? We have outrage on this show. That's the reason why we play urban alternative, we play black rock, afro punk, we play the other side of the black experience on purpose, because no one else is doing that, all right? But for the most part, it is a big minstrel industry. And we see that Cyrus has said, she kind of digs ratchet culture. She digs ratchet culture. The reality is, I don't understand why there's a perception that black folk own ratchet culture. If you show the entirety of the different cultural aspects. The fact that, this is what I wanted Daryl to pick up on. We're going to go into the Afropunk thing. Daryl and myself, I didn't see Daryl there, but we went to Afropunk. Afropunk was right down the road from where MTV was. Why did they have cameras at Afropunk? Because, matter of fact, Janelle Monae has played it. Janelle Monae worked her chops, worked her bones at the Afropunk festivals years ago. Okay? The Heavy, they were at Afropunk. I mean, all these indie acts are at Afropunk, right down the road, right down the block from where MTV from the Barclays Center. Why didn't they have cameras there for this? I mean, Will Smith was there. His wife has a rock band, Wicked Wisdom. So why wouldn't they have some kind of linkage between the show and the Afropunk thing that Daryl, you have to admit, each year that thing's getting, it's getting like the Comic-Con. It's getting exponentially bigger and bigger.
And you know, MTV is a group that, we love having cameras. We're at Lollapalooza. We're at Ozfest. We're at all of these places. Name one time you've seen the MTV cameras at Afropunk. I could tell you the answer. Never.
All right? The only video you get from this outside of Video Music Box here in New York, big ups to Uncle Ralph McDaniels, all right, who televised portions of Afro Punk Out, okay, is with people with their handhelds and the recording stuff. You know, this is something, and BET, hey, Fuse, you want to take over MTV? You want to get them up? Here's an idea. Play music. Play music. I know a lot of the younger generation, they love all of these reality shows and stuff like that, but it's music television. You need music. I'm not talking about a recycled thing, or as one of my favorite rappers, Sugar Tongue Slim, says, but at ringtone recycled garbage. Did you see the Questlove set?
Yeah.
Did you see the Heavy set? Did you see Theophilus London? That's what MTV needed in Brooklyn. That's what you needed. And the funny thing is, as you said, Will Smith did double duty. He was an Afro Punk. He was at the MTV Awards show. Okay? Jada's there with her band. You couldn't get Jada Smith to play the pregame? You know, you couldn't. If there is this dynamic out there, just someone out there, as you call in, maybe explain to me why this new generation of musicians can't play instruments. I gave you the perfect example with Janelle Monáe, B.O.B., and Bruno Mars. They play their instruments. That's why I say right now, for me, all right, Bruno Mars is one of the top five performers out there today. Captain mentioned another one, Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga is an accomplished pianist, and she plays the guitar too. She's a musician. Bruno Mars is a musician. My thing was, I didn't even get mad at the Miley Cyrus thing. I was more mad at that prick, Robin Thicke. And in fact, if you have to ask me why I'm mad at Robin Thicke, then you haven't been paying attention to the news. What he's doing with the Marvin Gaye family is disgraceful.
Well, not just and him. Be fair. He's got some minstrels on the side of him, too. He's got T.I. and he's got Pharrell. That suit is also included. It's not just him. Not just
man,
him.
I'm just,
you're going to be fair.
Afro couldn't let it go. Couldn't let it go.
Wait. And I'll just say this about Pharrell, too. Pharrell let me down with this one. But Robin Thicke, in one sentence, says, Marvin Gaye's an inspiration to me. He's one of my heroes. And in the next sentence, just suing the Marvin Gaye family. You know?
Right, hold on. Hold on. We got to I have some people holding for a long time.
Sorry about that. I lost control.
That's all right.
Go right ahead.
That's all right. That's what you're here for. 312. What's up?
Hey, it's Sergio.
Serge.
Yeah, Sergio.
Welcome,
look, you know, Lady Gaga, look, if she had any real talent, she wouldn't be stealing from Grace Jones. You know.
Say that too.
But here's the thing, real fast. You know, there's an old thing they used to say. You know, when a Broadway producer or some nightclub owner was auditioning a woman, you know, who wanted, you know, was auditioning a job for a singer or some performer, and she was really bad. And the old line used to say was, why don't you just shut up and show us your tits? Well, that's when I saw the Miley Cyrus thing. I said, well, you know, she's showing us her tits. She doesn't have any talent, you know. So, you know, when you're desperate, you do what you can. You show your body. And the other thing, too, is that... And actually, one of the other persons was coming close to this. I think the other reason why people are talking so much about this is because Miley Cyrus is like, not only is she white, she's really, really white. You know, if they had, say, a hipper, I don't know, you tell me, if there was a hipper white singer, would people get upset? I'll give you the analogy. You remember that film... You remember that film, Tropic Thunder?
Yes.
Okay. So you had Not Morton Downey, sorry.
Robert Downey Jr.
Right, in blackface. He was playing a this white actor who was playing a black actor in blackface. And a black guy in blackface. And I used to say, isn't that outrageous? And every black person told me, I don't see the problem with that. And I realized the reason why they didn't have a problem with it is because Robert Downey in their eyes is cool.
Yep.
He's hip. He's like an Ertaz sort of kind of black person. Now, if that role was played by Kevin James, if that role was played by, you know, a really like white comedian like Kevin James,
generic.
Generic, people would be outraged. But because it was Robert Downey, and he's kind of hip, and he's cool, and he's laid back, so he's kind of sort of black, to a lot of people, it wasn't that far a stretch. They weren't bothered by it. Same thing with Miley Cyrus. I think the reason why people are really upset is because she's really, really white. She's like the whitest girl. You go to the whitest suburb in the world, and there you find a lot of girls who look just like her. If you got a white chick, you name me one, I can't think of one, who was considered hipper and cooler and did the exact same thing, would people be upset?
Hey, Madonna built her career on this. You know, Madonna.
Right.
Madonna, there would have been no problem because people are used to Madonna going out there. You know, this is where the captain's totally right. You know, Miley Cyrus did two things at the same time. She shed that Hannah Montana image. That thing is now dead. And at the same time, she, 95% of the world that watched it, that's all they talked about. And
keep in mind, she knows her shelf life is very limited. I mean, who was really talking about her before then? This gave her another 15 minutes. Because already, before this performance, she was already at 14 and a half. This has given her a little bit more. She knows she's not that talented. She knows she's not that great. But what can I do just to extend my popularity just a little bit longer? Was she going to top herself? I doubt it. She doesn't have that kind of talent for recreating herself that, say, Madonna does. You know? So what is she going to do?
Well, listen, you're right about that. I mean, there are some artists that can be white, we have seen, but they have a better cool factor, and they're coming from a different place. She's coming from Disney. Her father was a one-hit wonder country artist. Her style of music, it's just that she just, all of a sudden, as she matures, she wants to take on an edgier vibe. And the way you become edgier is to go to the black folk. If you tap into some degree of blackness for your edge, that's the cover that you need. And now,
yeah, but you know what?
She has a song called Twerk now. Now because of her, now the whole world knows about twerk as if twerking hasn't been around for 25, 30 years. But now,
hey, you know what? I go back, and I remember Bo Derek back in 1979 in the movie Ten. Braided her hair, and everybody went crazy. And you're like, Jesus Christ, black woman has been doing that for the last 150 years.
Yep. Correct.
A white chick does it, all of a sudden it's a new thing. Gee, all these white chicks are putting collagen in their lips to get their lips bigger. Gee, where did they get that idea from? There's always been a history of approximizing or taking for black culture. What do you think Brando did? When people saw Brando for the first time, they like, oh my God, I've never seen him like that. I look at Brando and say, he's doing a black guy. That's what Brando was doing. What'd you get? I don't know. Well, you got, he's just being like, you know, approximating black culture, black masculinity. James Dean did it too. You know, that's always been the case.
Anytime somebody's been labeled cool, I've seen this when I was a kid, and I always thought it was crazy. Anytime they said, you could be in an entire white environment on screen, and they said, he's gotten cool lessons. The guy, all of a sudden, he's a nerd. Let's make him cool. He starts walking hipper. He starts to parody a type of blackness. And no one said anything. Why is he not acting? Yeah, exactly, the new guy, DJ Quails. I mean, that's even more recent, Darryl. That's too recent. I'm going back 50, 60 years. Anytime it was required for a white person to be, quote-unquote, cool, he did a blackface. He really did. But no one said anything about it.
Gene Wilder with Richard Pryor.
That's still not
Silver Street,
I think.
Yeah, where they were in the jail cell, and Richard Pryor Gene Wilder.
Silver Street.
Yeah, right, three movies together.
The one he's talking about is the one that was directed by Sidney Poitier, 1980.
Yeah, well,
Stir Crazy.
There it is. Thank you, Sergio.
But he did it before that when he was on when it was those two on the train. Gene Wilder literally put on blackface and started to hip walk. That was under Richard Pryor's direction. I remember the movie.
But it's all salient points, okay? And it's all right there. The main thing we get at here and what we want you at home to take away as you listen to us with this is that there is true talent there in spots. The problem is we focus so much on the untalented stuff. Or the true talented ones never get a chance to see the light of day. And some of these ignoramuses out there, they take that as, well, that's how the whole scene is. There's nothing else out there. That's what it is today. That's all it is. We want to tell you there is more out there. Try open your eyes and look. Get adventurous. Go and check out some things. You know, Afropunk. Check it out. Jazz. Check it out. You know? I'm a rockhead. I'm into metal. I'm into alternative rock. I'm into that too. I could tell you the amount of dirty looks I get when I walk into some of these places. Like, we don't think you belong here. And then when I'm singing note for note the songs that the band is singing as the concert's going on, I'm like, how did he know all of that? You know, because I once got curious, went out, found it, took a look, actually liked it, followed it. It's simple. That's what we want you guys to do today. Don't just think, it's 2 Chainz, it's Miley Cyrus, and there's more out there than the mainstream, folks. Astronaut or nerd.
All right, let's go. Speaking of alternative music, this is what we do here. We're going to go to a quick musical break, Captain. I believe... Is that Q? I think I might have Q. Let me go to him quickly, then I'll bring it back. 484, is that you? 484?
Yeah, this is Q Storm, yes.
Okay, Q, hold on 1 second. We're going to bring you back. I want to go to a quick groove, and then we'll go into this more deeply. Darryl, I want you to go more into the Afropunk thing, the Afropunk experience, and I'll also give assistance on that. Speaking of Afropunk more, I'm going to play some Afropunk. This is Milstead Dirty Elvis. We'll be back in a few moments discussing Afropunk. What was it like? We'll be right back.
I think that someone
say we're back once again, since we're talking about Afropunk, we'll be apropos to play some Afropunk music. That is Milstead performing Dirty Elvis. Going back into the Afropunk thing, Daryl, you were in attendance. I was in attendance on Saturday. And I don't know about you, but I have the same feeling when I go there, same feeling of comfort as I do when I go to the Convo Convention. And I think there's a little bit of a cross component. And I think there's some Afro nerds that just so happen to be Afro punk heads as well. We had a story that we spoke about a few shows ago about two young gentlemen from L.A. or from the West Coast that are attending UC Berkeley. And they're both quote-unquote Afro nerds. One just so happened to have a Bad Brains T-shirt on, and I said, it's not by accident that this guy is studying at UC Berkeley, and he happens to have a Bad Brains T-shirt on. So, explain to the audience. I do it all the time. But I want you to give your impressions. What is Afropunk, and what's the festival? What does the festival mean to you?
Afropunk. What is it? It's our counterculture. And that's the way I look at it. It's our counterculture. Sure, you have jazz and R&B and hip-hop acts there, all right? And that would be, for a lot of outsiders, that would be the usual. But oftentimes at Afropunk, not this year, I was kind of disappointed, you have a skateboard competition, you have a ramp, you have... they had a climbing wall this year, you know, that was kind of weird. They had yoga, which was interesting. But, you know, it just shows that we have more facets than what it in the mainstream, we're put into a box. Afropunk to me is breaking the box, breaking the mold, okay? Like I said, a lot of the acts out there, Saul Williams, Death could be our Metallica, and yeah. I'm a Metallica fan, but Death is everything in Living Color wanted to be, or Living Color wanted to be, I think Death is right now. The problem
Living
is
Color was
Death,
there too.
I know,
but
when Living Color first came out, that was what they were trying to be. They were trying to be that big, but I think Death is that way now, because I'm surprised the amount of non-black people that know who Death is.
No,
you know?
I'm not. Because the New York Times broke the story. There were several stories that broke about Death, about this Detroit black punk band that might be where the origins of punk actually come from before Sid Vicious. That's what they're going with this. So that's another element to it also, is that they came about in the early 70s, and now, you know, they don't want to give it up, but this might be yet another example of white folks appropriating black culture. I'm just putting it out there. Go ahead, Darryl,
you know, but I really thought it was Bad Brains until I found out more about Death and then found that out, you know? And at the same time as that's all going on, the crowd was still receptive for the different DJs. The crowd was receptive for a Kendrick Lamar. The crowd was receptive for Chuck D, who, out of all the performances, it was Chuck D's words in between the songs that I was like, this is where I need a camera. This is where everybody needs to hear these words. Where it's not us versus them. It's us versus ourselves, you know? You want to rise up in the community. You want the community to rise up. How about you rise up within yourself? And then Chuck D hits us with Fight the Power. You know, that sort of stuff right there, to me, that's Afropunk. Afropunk is testing your limits. Afropunk is you're in a community, within a community, within a genre. And you're going around, you're meeting people from different places. I think I met people from six different countries. Right there, all rocking. They just came in. And they were like, oh, we have to catch it here. We're using it as a New York vacation at the same time. This is cool. And I was like, you know what, this is awesome.
this is what Woodstock was to me. Not the old Woodstock, but when I was at 94's Woodstock, and we all know what a disaster that turned out to be. This is what Coachella is. Electric Zoo is going on now. This is what Electric Zoo is. But it's mainly within our community. And it's something that that's why I said Fuse and BET. MTV's not going to do it. They're too mainstream. But if you could get a camera over there, if you could show some of this stuff out so that people could see, BET, I'm looking at you. TV One, I'm looking at you. Don't wait a few hours. Show this. The Philly show. Anyway, go back to you after that.
One quick thing, because we only got about 6 minutes remaining. It's amazing. Captain, once again, these shows, we didn't even get to the really heart of what we needed to talk about, because when we get into it, we get into it.
A lot of emotionalism in this show. It was good, though.
let me bring in, I'll say my piece, but I want to bring in Q Storm. Q, do you have any words on this or any thoughts in general? We got about 6 minutes.
Real quick, I'm just looking in the chat room about I was responding to what would Jeff Porkins do, saying we need to stop limiting to people of color. Good music is good music. That's all well and good, but the reason we need to do that to identify that black people are part of this festival is because the word needs to get out that we're not a monolithic, single-thinking type of people. I don't know how many people know that black people do listen to rock music, punk music, all types of music. That's why it's important to say these are people of color performing these songs at this festival. That's why you have to get it out there like that.
Unlocking the truth.
Well, this is exactly. Unlocking the truth, a band of preteens, like 12, 13-year-olds, playing with a great deal of efficiency, and they play in Times Square, and they were also one of the feature acts at Afropunk. And you can go to YouTube and simply put in Unlocking the Truth. And I have a T-shirt, actually, so I'm really proud of those kids. And they're doing heavy metal. But I'm pretty sure they're getting their fair share of vitriol from their own because they're supposed to be into 2 Chainz. And to me, it's embarrassing at this point. I know Daryl concurs. It's embarrassing for black folks to be all on the same team. I don't want someone figuring me out. That's probably why I read comics so much. I might be the villain underneath the cape, for Christ's sake. Well, I'm taking Daryl's role now. Daryl's supposed to be the villain. But anyway, the bottom line is, it was great to see black folks grooving to a different beat. And it's unsettling that we saw a corporate-controlled musical display at MTV. It was noted that MTV really was an all-white affair. It was a mostly 90% white affair doing black music. For 15 minutes, we saw Justin Timberlake basically do a black man's R&B act, unquestionably. And there was no real black representation. We've let that go because we've become so shoddy and so non-musical and so irrelevant that now, and not to racialize everything because it's not what Afro Nerd's about, but it's about being truthful. Black folks have become some of those who are controlling the musical representation. We're being perceived as non-musical, and we're just big butts grinding in the middle of the night, if you believe Nicki Minaj. But if you went to Afropunk, you would have seen musicians. You would have seen black folk doing the rock thing, a genre that they actually invented 65, 70 years ago. It really in 1949, 1950, 51. Seeing a black man with a guitar rocking would not have been a shock. For some reason, in 2013, it would be a shock. We have Gary Clark Jr. There's a number of artists I can rattle off the top of my head, black, brown, minority artists that are doing things outside of that monolith that Q was talking about. And we do have to label it Afropunk. The part that angers me, and I think angers Daryl, is MTV was down the block, and they did their corny corporate crap and did not bother to have a camera on a growing musical subculture. Because when I went across the bridge, Daryl, when I was approaching the BQE, and you can look down at the park, it was thousands of people out there. Last year was a big thing. This year it was exponentially larger. And I'm saying, what is it going to take? And again, black folk, brown folk, Asian folks, Asian women with long legs, incidentally. Black women, I was looking at pinned toes, you know, that's my thing. I saw black women with wild afros and felt figures. I mean, it was. I know Dallas saw that. You know, there were some things going on there. I didn't see too many obese black women. I saw some natural black, brown, Asian women that were grooving to a different beat. Why weren't there cameras there? That's the question that needs to be asked. Darryl, what are your thoughts? And then we got about a minute.
Hey, let's face it. Male, female, if you're obese, there's no way you're going to survive in a mosh pit. Let's call that. But either you'll drop or the crowd will kill you. Either way, listen, folks, just open up your eyes and explore. You're much more intelligent than anybody gives you credit for. That's what we try to do. Cap?
I'm good. You said a mouthful right there. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Well, you know, listen, I thought that 2 hours would be plenty of time. but we have seconds remaining. Darryl, man, we've got to do this more often. It is what it is.
Superheroes next week.
Yes. We got to talk about, what is that, CV Nation? CV Nation,
yes.
Black Superhero web series. We didn't talk about that. There's stuff that's going on. It's going down. All right, this is Rock and Roll Affair, remixed by Prince, who might have been there. He was supposed to be there, too. We'll see if we can introduce Captain, his best friend, Andre Simone, next year. We're working on that. Dow, you got to be there to see that. Rock and Roll Affair, Prince, next week. Happy Labor Day, folks.
in this thing called race. I believed in rock and roll. Appear on the big screen. He just wanted to hear a splash in his name. Can you scream my name? Do you know what I mean? Don't cry, nothing ever comes from I'm